"He's right about that, Charlie," Caleb said with a grimace. "And if they do believe that, it will be child's play for the group of four and the Temple Loyalists to portray his decision as cowardice," Narman went on with implacable logic. "For that matter, let's be honest, that's what it would be in some ways."
"Oh!"
He waved his hand gently before Charlian could object. "I agree a better word for it would be prudence, Your Majesty. In fact, I'll go farther and call it simple prudence or even sanity. And all three of us know it would be prudence on our part, not his. That we'd have to have Merlin in here to arm wrestle him into submission before he'd agree. But the impression in Coruscant, and probably even in Chisholm and Emerald, would be that he'd stayed away in order to avoid the threat of assassination. I'm sure a lot of people who already support the Church of Caris would be delighted if he did just that. Unfortunately, even more people who oppose the Church of Caris would be just as delighted by it. They'd hammer away at the point that not even the Church's own Archbishop has enough genuine faith to risk death in support of his beliefs. And if they can do that successfully, Your Majesty..." The plump little prince met Charlian's eyes very levelly. "Then everything Archbishop Michael has already achieved, and everything Father Timon died trying to achieve in Coruscant, would be for nothing." The quiet in the council chamber was deafening. The quiet crackle of coal in the stove seemed almost deafening by contrast, and outside the windows a few dry flakes of snow began to dust down out of the clouds, brushing against the window panes like silent ghosts. The stillness lasted for several seconds, and then, grudgingly, Charlian nodded. "You're right," she said with manifest unhappiness. "That's exactly what Michael would argue. And he'd be right, damn it." She looked down at the muffin in her right hand and discovered she'd been picking it to pieces with the fingers of her left hand. "Worse, I know it too. And worse yet, all I'd do if I tried to argue him out of it would be to make him even more stubborn." She continued the muffin's gradual destruction for another minute or so, then looked back up, and her eyes were fierce. "But if that's the case, then we are damned well going to send Merlin along with him. I think we could justify that on the basis of what happened to Father Timon, without anyone deciding Michael lacks the courage of his convictions. And if there's anyone, outside me, Caleb would be willing to send Merlin to look after, it would have to be him. And it's not as if we have to actually have Merlin right here in Chiraeth, so we can confer with him when we need to, either." "No, that's true." Caleb's eyes were thoughtful. "It never occurred to me, but you're right. We've already been sending him off on little errands for us here in Chisholm, like his current visit to Eastshire. So, we could..." Someone knocked gently on the council chamber door, and all three of them turned to face it. Then it opened, and their eyes went wide in astonishment when Merlin Athrawis stepped through it, as if the mere mention of his name had magically summoned him back from Michaelburg. His boots were thick with mud. More mud had spattered his breeches and the hooded coat he wore over his breastplate and hauberk, and his shoulders were dusted with melting snow. "Your Majesties," he bowed to Caleb and Charlian, then to Narman, "Your Highness." The door closed behind him, and he straightened. "And good morning to you, too," Caleb said, his head cocked quizzically, as the closing door provided them with privacy once more. "Forgive me for asking this, but aren't you still supposed to be in Eastshire, discussing things with Green Valley and the Duke?"
"I am," Merlin agreed. "Something's come up, though. I thought it would be better to discuss it with you face to face, rather than over the comm, so I headed home yesterday."
He grimaced and looked down at his muddy boots.
"I'm afraid I didn't put in my downtime last night."
He raised his head once more. "I changed horses a dozen times or so,
and I hoped I was going to make it in time to speak to you and Charlian first thing this morning. He grimaced again, this time with a ghost of humor. I hadn't expected the two of you to be up quite this early.
That was because you failed to consider my regularly scheduled bout of morning sickness, I imagine, Charlian said wryly. Admittedly, it doesn't usually get us out of the bedchamber this early, but I assure you we're usually awake by now.
Narman took another bite of buttered scone as the simplest means of suppressing his smile. You're right, Your Majesty. I did somehow manage to forget about that. I apologize. The Sajan bowed to her again, a bit more deeply than before.
You said you meant to talk to us first thing in the morning, Caleb said, as Merlin straightened once more. The Emperor's eyes were intent.
Should I assume you intended to discuss certain events in Coruscant?
I see you already know about that. Merlin's tone was just a bit odd, Narman thought. Almost, not quite, but almost uncomfortable.
You might say that, Caleb replied grimly. I've been asking Al to keep an eye on Father Timon's sermons. When I asked him for an update this morning, he told me.
I see. Merlin's voice still seemed just a little off-normal, Narman thought, and felt his own curiosity perk.
We've just been discussing with Narman whether or not we should allow Michael to continue with his pastoral visit, Charlian said. Obviously, Caleb and I aren't especially overjoyed at the prospect in light of all this. So we've been thinking we should send you along to make sure Wyman and his butchers don't take a shot at him as well.
That why? Merlin began, then stopped.